Welcome into the Friday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We got a busy show ahead of ourselves, as coming up in the second half, we are going to be speaking with Max Richmond of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, as the Trump administration has proposed a couple of gimmicks that will impact both Social Security and Medicare. They're not going to do a lot of good, so we'll be chatting with Max about that in the second half of the show. But for now, let's get right down to business, as I am honored to be joined by Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia. He is from Illinois' 4th Congressional District, and he is one of the big progressive leaders in Congress that I think you'll be hearing a lot about in the coming years. Congressman Garcia, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Oh, as a progressive, I'm delighted to be on the airwaves with other progressives in Minnesota and with you, Brett, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's only like 3 progressive stations in the entire country. You guys have one, I think, down in Chicago, WCPT.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, there are not
That's
many.
Correct.
So, yeah, we're definitely glad to be one of the few voices out there.
Well, you keep it up.
Absolutely. So a lot of issues I want to talk to you about, including family separation, how COVID has impacted disproportionately people of color, and a little bit about the presidential election. I do want to start with the election because, as I'm sure you can attest to, people need to vote this fall, even though the polls certainly do look good for Democrats, not just at the top of the ballot, but down ballot as well. So important we get there and vote and get Donald Trump out of office and get more progressives in Congress, correct?
Absolutely. I just want to share that I voted on the first day of in-person voting. My wife and I and a group of other electeds and residents of my community. I was very pleased to see that a long line was forming at the opening of the polls, and it lasted throughout the day. So it's a great, great thing. There are also very encouraging reports about people voting by mail this year in great numbers. I got a report earlier this morning that over 1 million people have voted just yesterday alone in the state of Texas. So the prospects for, flipping Texas look enhanced at this juncture. I won't say that it's going to be done, but we're certainly hoping that it will. And again, you can either vote from home by mail, or you can vote early in person, as I did yesterday. And I wanted to do it just because I liked the thrill of doing it. And of course, you can also vote on election day at a polling location near you. And of course, that's November 3rd. So this is a critical election for our country, perhaps one of the most important since the Civil War. I would up the ante on that. And I think that it's really, really critical for progressives to get out there and vote. If you voted like I did and, campaigned for Bernie Sanders, I've gotten on this campaign. I've been, stomping for Joe Biden all across the states in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa. I just got off of a couple of interviews in the state of Ohio. We've been in the Southwest as well. We want to win this election. We want to, put our country on a brand new course moving forward, be inclusive in the divisiveness and the hatred that has been spewed from the White House and through people in the administration, and really just redefine, the most important values and lasting values that our country has been a wonderful example of democracy in action. So if you haven't voted yet, please make a plan to do so. There are at least 3 ways to do it safely and conveniently for everyone out there.
And speaking of democracy in action, well, one example where we certainly don't have democracy in action are the hearings we're having right now for potential Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Now, I at least know over in the Senate, they've certainly been talking a lot about how she would likely rule on the Affordable Care Act and try to have that completely repealed. But there's another issue that has me very concerned, where she could potentially rule in a direction that would not help a lot of people, and that's DACA, since that is still probably going to come through the court system. And Congressman Garcia, that issue really has me concerned should that get to the Supreme Court with the Justice Amy Coney Barrett.
Absolutely. And, you know, we already got what I hope won't be a precursor of what the court can do in the coming years. And certainly if, Amy Barrett winds up on the court, the ruling on the census and cutting short by 2 weeks the deadline, you know, today is the last day to participate in the census, is really going to affect hard to count areas in cities across the country, especially where there are low income residents, where there are people of color, Latino and Black Americans as well. And the consequences are, you know, long lasting. We're going to deal with an undercount of individuals who need the type of support that government programs provide for the next 10 years. So, your sense about what will happen if Judge Barrett is approved to the Supreme Court with respect to, the future of the DACA class of immigrants that are yearning for legalization and a path to citizenship. You know, as American, as you and I, and really who don't know any other country besides the U.S. and have tremendous support from the public, you know, upwards of 80%, regardless of whether people identify as Republican, Democrat, or Independent, support them. This issue will be before the Supreme Court with, Judge Barrett being one of the decision makers. If her confirmation goes through, you know, the future of our policies with respect to climate change, where she clammed up and couldn't even acknowledge that climate change is a serious challenge to our existence as a planet, and certainly as a country, and one that emits so much, carbon into the air that we need to do something, you know, dramatic to turn that situation around. So it's very unfortunate that she would not open up and talk about issues that, you know, regardless of political persuasion, people have acknowledged or are acknowledging with each passing day that it's a serious existential issue and that it needs to be addressed by us.
We're speaking with Congressman Chuy Garcia. He is the U.S. House Representative in Illinois' 4th District. Now, your district is 67% Latinx, so you certainly do get a lot of people who are impacted by the immigration policies of the Trump administration. And I want to get your reaction to this New York Times investigation that was conducted a few weeks ago, where they, among other things, quoted former Attorney General Jeff Sessions as saying, "If we care about kids, don't bring them in, and we need to separate their children no matter their age." Paraphrasing there, but what I think really misses the point with this whole thing, with this whole idea that, well, if we just tell immigrants don't come to the country because we'll separate you from your children, it really misses the point about the desperate circumstances that a lot of our immigrants and asylum seekers are coming from in countries like Central America that are going through great upheaval, which in a lot of cases is our own doing, for interfering in their own politics. So just want to get your reaction to that, because it seems like we have such a lack of empathy from a lot of the members of the Trump administration.
You know, Brett, speaking of empathy, when Judge Barrett was, Coney Barrett was asked about family separation, she said nothing about it. For someone who is touting, you know, her large family, her diverse family, she could not express one iota of sympathy for the disastrous and cruel policy of separating children from their parents at the border, especially people seeking political asylum who have risked their lives coming here in hopes of, you know, having an opportunity to have their case heard before a judge and letting a judge determine if there is merit for them to remain here. So the latest reporting on the Trump's on the Trump administration's family separation policy is most troubling. You know, what would Joe Biden propose? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris recognize that immigration has been a most important source of talent and labor power and intellectual power for our country, that this country has had immense contributions from immigrants, energy, ideas, and aspirations. It's a pastime to reform our broken immigration system. Of course, Trump isn't interested in solving the border crisis. He just wants to gin up its base. A wall from sea to sea isn't smart. It's wasteful. Ripping babies from mothers' arms isn't right. A Muslim ban is un-American. So Joe Biden is recognizing that family unification and diversity are pillars of our immigration system. From day one, he will take urgent action on ending Trump's cruel and inhumane border policies that, you know, separate children from their mothers, protect dreamers and their families, recognizing them as the Americans that they are. And of course, reverse Trump's public charge rule, another attack against the community that has prevented people and scared people from participating in the census. And finally, Brett, I would say that he would put forth real legislative immigration reforms to Congress with a roadmap to citizenship for the nearly 11 million undocumented immigrants who already make up communities are vital to the development of the larger communities, places like Minneapolis, St. Paul, in many states across the country, and bring vitality to them because of their presence and contributions.
Final issue I want to talk with you here, Congressman Garcia. Again, we're speaking with Congressman Chuy Garcia. He is from the 4th District of Illinois in the U.S. House. And that, of course, is COVID-19, which is certainly another issue that the Trump administration has definitely botched. And COVID has really disproportionately impacted communities of color and people of color. And like I said, you do represent a district that is 67% Latinx. And I just want to get your take on what you've been seeing in terms of your district right now.
Mm-hmm. So in Chicagoland, Chicago and the suburbs, the Latino, Latina, Latinx communities have experienced the highest positivity rates than any other group, almost 3-1 when compared to whites in Illinois. Latino and Black Americans are dying at rates twice the rate of their white counterparts, and they're 3 times more likely to get sick. Latino Decisions did a survey of the impact of COVID and found that Latinos were displaced at much higher rates from their employment because of the closure of businesses, that they were more apt to lose hours when hours were reduced if they were lucky enough to remain in their jobs. They have some of the highest rates of uninsured realities to cope with, which keeps them, one, from, you know, getting tested, two, having the ability to quarantine themselves even in their settings, and of course the fear of, you know, going to a clinic, to a hospital to get assistance. It's much more pronounced and only contributes to the spread of COVID. They're less likely to have access, of course, to healthcare and health insurance, and they're more likely to be exposed to air pollutants tied to higher COVID death rates as well. And then lastly, they're more likely to be in essential occupations as workers, thus risking their lives for the rest of the country, and less likely to have a job they can just do from home. So the disparities in our society as it relates to health and healthcare have been crushing for our community. People are struggling, to make ends meet, to pay rent, a lot of anxiety in the community. We have done many food distribution events throughout our district. We've worked with our nonprofit partners across the district as well to alleviate the suffering that COVID has brought on these communities. I just want to add that, as President Joe Biden will work for health equity, not just health care, and he'll work across issues as he does to end systemic racism and learning about all of the disparities that the COVID crisis has brought to the fore. Things like making COVID testing, treatment, and any eventual vaccine free for everyone, exponentially ramping up testing and making sure it reaches every corner of the country, getting critical medical equipment and care to hospitals in every community, and of course, to end Trump's deadly lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act and strip millions of health coverage even during a deadly pandemic. And Brett, as someone who supported Bernie Sanders and someone who supports the Medicare for All legislation in Congress, I have to say one of the things that the conversations between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders produced was a commitment from Joe Biden to lower the eligibility age for Medicare for All to 60 years. So these are the types of things that are becoming a reality and a part of the conversation that's ongoing between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders supporters to address some of the issues that Bernie Sanders has championed: healthcare, affordable care, healthcare for all, student indebtedness, climate change, etc. Added reasons for everyone out there to get out and exercise their right to vote.
And I absolutely loved it when Joe Biden said, yeah, let's try to lower our Medicare eligibility age to 60, because it's such a quick way that we could potentially move to a Medicare for all system when you lower that age, because all of a sudden you take the people who are the least healthy among people who typically get private insurance, you put them on Medicare, who all of a sudden become the most healthy people on Medicare. It's a win-win. So once we figure out that's a success, well, then let's lower the Medicare age to 55. Then to 50, then to 45. I think that's a really quick way that we can move in that direction towards Medicare for all. So I've been talking about that for a while, and I think it's absolutely genius to, yeah, let's lower that Medicare age. It's a good first step that I think could rapidly get us in that right direction of Medicare for all.
These are small steps, but they're important. More people are learning the lessons of the pandemic. Health disparities are bad for our country. We are not a leader in this regard in the world. And I think that this is a part of that evolution and recognition that we've got to do something bolder. And that's why an engaged citizenry and voting, in this election is so important.
We've been speaking with Congressman Chuy Garcia. He is from the 4th District of Illinois in the U.S. House, taking some time to chat with us today, which I really, really appreciate. And Congressman Garcia, thanks again for joining us on the show today and talking about some big election issues coming up.
It's great. I look forward to conversations in the future, Brett. Keep up the good work.
And stick around. We'll come on back and have more on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. And welcome back to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. In just a few moments, we'll be joined by Max Richman of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Now, Max happens to know the actress who played Louise in the old Harry and Louise commercials you might remember from the 1990s when the Bill Clinton administration was proposing reforms to the healthcare system. If you don't remember, Harry and Louise were basically a middle-aged family that was talking about why the proposed healthcare reforms were going to be bad for them. Well, like I said, Max knows the actress who played Louise, and she's back now. This time on the right side of history, as she recently recorded a video talking about why the Trump administration is going to be so damaging to both Social Security and Medicare. Here's the video now.
Hi, I'm Louise. About 25 years ago, I was on TV with Harry doing a bunch of ads about healthcare. And now I'm retired and here to talk to you about Social Security. The bottom line is that the president is playing politics and undermining Social Security. Despite his promises not to touch Social Security, he has issued an executive order to temporarily defer payroll taxes. He thinks this will stimulate the economy, but it does nothing for people with no jobs and no paychecks. And it's also very confusing because not every employer is going to follow his executive order. Only those that are forced to, like the government and the military. So what happens when those taxes need to be repaid next year? Americans will be scrambling to pay them back in 2021. Unless President Trump pushes through his next scheme, which really worries me. Because now he's promising to eliminate payroll taxes entirely if he's reelected president. Please understand, payroll taxes fund Social Security. And without them, it will be totally defunded in just 2.5 years. Benefits will have to be cut. We've been paying into Social Security our entire working lives. We've earned these benefits. And if he defunds Social Security, what happens to us retirees? To disabled? To the survivors? Do we go on public assistance? Do we move in with our children and become the next generation's responsibility? What happens to us?
And you just happen to be listening to the audio of a video from Luis, if you remember those ads from back in the 90s when we were having another healthcare debate during the first term of the Clinton administration, those Harry and Luis ads. Well, Luis returned, and as she was talking about, doesn't think this payroll tax cut in regards to Social Security is a good idea. Hey, continuing along that theme, we're happy to welcome back to the show Max Richman of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I have a number of topics to talk about since we've seen, well, amped up pressure to implement more gimmicks with Social Security and Medicare, including the payroll tax cut, and also these brand new Trump Medicare cards, which apparently, he says, would save seniors a whole bunch of money on their prescription drugs. Whether that is actually the truth remains to be seen, as Max will certainly fill us in on that. Max Richman, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's talk about this video we just had a chance to listen to with Luis making a return and talking about this payroll tax cut. Talk about the development of making this video, because I think it's very powerful to bring her back, being that she was heavily featured back in the 90s when we were having another healthcare debate.
Well, you're right. Those Harry and Louise ads were really iconic and were instrumental in scuttling the Clinton healthcare plan back in the early 90s. And Louise Goddard is the actress. She's retired now. She did hundreds of commercials, and that was one of them. And I know her family and talked to her about Social Security. She was very upset about the payroll tax deferral and the pledge by the president, if he were reelected, to just eliminate the payroll tax. And when she found out what that would mean for the future of the program, she was shocked, and she wanted to do something. And I suggested, well, people remember the Harry and Louise ads, and why don't we do a video of you speaking to the audience about this and its impact on the Social Security program. So it's a pretty compelling video. And as your listeners can acknowledge, once they hear Louise talking about the problems that it would mean for the Social Security program and for beneficiaries.
Yeah, it's a good way to also have Louise kind of redeem herself, for lack of a better way of putting it, since at least a lot of people in our listening audience are remembering back to those ads that were made back during the Clinton administration and weren't happy about those. But yeah, it sounds like Luis is definitely on the right side of the issue now.
Well, I think so. She seemed pretty dedicated to trying to do something with this in the debate about the future of Social Security. And I've encouraged her, frankly, to participate in this video, and there's a little Q&A at the end where she and I talk about why she decided to do this. But I appreciate you bringing that to the attention of your many listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's continue talking about Social Security and the payroll tax cut, because you and I were chatting just before we came on air how it sounds like a lot of members of Congress are hearing from their constituents who are very concerned about Social Security funding and kind of seeing through this gimmick that Trump has implemented where this payroll tax cut really isn't going to help a lot of people in the long run. It's, well, exactly what I said it is, a gimmick.
That's absolutely right. First of all, it's not compulsory. A lot of employers, including our organization, we're not honoring it. We don't have to. It's optional. The only groups that are compelled to adhere to it are the military and the federal employees. They have no choice. But many employers are not doing it because it is confusing. I know the Chamber of Commerce came out against it, which is pretty unusual for the chamber. They've been supportive of Republican efforts on Social Security and many other issues in the past. And the problems are manifold. If an employee has the payroll tax deferred for the rest of this year, from September 1st till the end of the year, under current law, and the executive order, they would be obligated to pay that back in the first 4 months of next year. So all of a sudden, they're going to be paying double payroll tax with each paycheck for the first 4 months of next year. And they more than likely will have spent that savings, and they're going to have to scramble to come up with that money. Now, what is really disturbing, and this is something Louise Goddard gets into in the video, the president's next scheme, she nailed it when she called it a scheme, is he has pledged, if reelected, he will eliminate the payroll tax completely. That is such an irresponsible comment and position for a president of the United States to take. I don't know if he understands how Social Security is funded or cares or both, but without the payroll tax, the program would run out of money in a couple of years, and nobody would be able to receive benefits. Now, Social Security has long-range solvency issues. The trustees have told us the program will be able to pay full benefits until 2035. And at that point, if there are no changes in law, only 80% of benefits will be available for beneficiaries. That date probably has been moved closer, I'm sure it has, to the present because of the pandemic and so many people unemployed, therefore not working and not paying payroll tax. So that date is even closer, I think, than 2035. But if you eliminate the payroll tax, as the president has pledged to do, if reelected, the actuary of the Social Security program, the chief actuary, says the program will be totally out of money. It will use up its reserve, no more money coming in through the payroll tax. Benefits would stop in about 2.5 years. This is such an irresponsible position and so blatantly political. You know, for a president of the United States to really trade Social Security for votes, it's practically obscene, in my opinion.
And just to show how obscene this is, for the first time in your organization's 38 years you've been around?
Correct.
38 years, yeah. The National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, by the way, ncpssm.org, has endorsed a presidential candidate, which normally you guys like to stay out of the politics of it, but in this case, as you brought up, if this payroll tax is permanent, you have no more funding for Social Security. And I know people might, probably not listeners to our show, but others who might not follow politics very closely would think, well, that'd be nice to get those extra couple hundred bucks in my bank account from my paycheck. But really, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good when you're an older person and Social Security isn't being funded anymore.
Well, not only that, but first of all, you're right. We've endorsed Vice President Biden, the first time in our history that we've endorsed in a presidential race. We take positions on candidates for the House, U.S. House, and U.S. Senate, but have stayed away from presidential endorsements. But this payroll tax issue was really the tipping point for us, it being, as I said, so irresponsible. And it's not only, yes, people who are on Social Security, their benefits would cease in about 2.5 years if the president is reelected and follows through on that pledge. But it's workers, too. Think about all the people that have been paying payroll tax for 20, 30 years, 40 years working, expecting to be beneficiaries when they reach eligibility age, and all of a sudden they're going to not have anything. I don't think the American public is ready for that.
I would be so angry. I mean, if I were to run into the case where I've been paying Social Security for decades and years, well, I actually am one of those people, if all of a sudden, oh yeah, those benefits that you've been paying or that payroll tax you've been paying for years and years, you're not going to see any of the benefits of it. I don't know if you could ever sue. I don't know who you would necessarily file a lawsuit against, but I would rightfully be angry. Well, I am angry about that. Yeah, if you're paying money into this thing and you're not getting any benefit for
it. Right. Now, what the president has said, and I watched him, he was either getting on the helicopter on Marine One or getting off of it, I can't recall. But he said to the reporters when he was asked about this, he said, well, this has nothing to do with Social Security. It won't impact Social Security. We're just going to use the general fund, taxes, federal taxes to fund this program. The reason Social Security has been so successful and has survived so many attacks on it is it has a dedicated revenue stream. Once it becomes dependent on general revenues, it's going to be subject to all of the arguments about, well, we have to save money, we have a huge debt, we can't afford Social Security. That doesn't happen now because that money is dedicated from the payroll tax. It's completely separate, has a reserve, not a deficit. And when I heard the president say that, I thought, really? You just passed an enormous tax cut about a year and a half ago that added trillions to the federal debt, trillions more added to deal with the pandemic, which was necessary. And you think the Congress is going to allocate trillions more? Where is that money to fund the Social Security program? It is totally unrealistic, and it opens the program up to serious cuts in benefits and, at some point, the elimination of benefits altogether. And yes, it's retirees, it's workers, it's survivors, it's disabled, it's children. I think about 3 million children get by in life because Social Security is there for them in the event that a working parent dies or becomes disabled. All of those benefits disappear if the president follows through on this scheme.
What exactly do you think the end game is here as to why they're doing this? For years, we heard that, well, Republicans want to privatize Social Security. What are you thinking in terms of why they're so gung-ho on, well, completely gutting the Social Security program?
Well, I think right now it's just electoral politics. It's a way to get people to say, oh, my gosh, workers are getting extra a few dollars in each paycheck, and the president we should be grateful to him and reelect him. I remember back in the 90s, Speaker Newt Gingrich talked about the best way to get rid of the Medicare program was to cut its funding, and it would wither on the vine. You know, that's the undercurrent here. Let's make the program, let's sacrifice the program, let's strangle the program, and it'll wither on the vine. And so many people who have not been supportive of Social Security for all these years, who feel people should take care of themselves. You know, sometimes I think that philosophy is, we're going to get rid of Social Security and Medicare, and you take care of yourself, and good luck. And I'm not even sure about the good luck part. Yeah.
And coming up on the other side of the break, I'll continue my conversation with Max Richman of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, as we'll be talking about these proposed Trump drug cards, which supposedly will save seniors a whole bunch of money on their medications. Yeah, do you really believe that? I don't. Well, we'll talk about that with Max coming up next. Back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Let's get to part two of my interview now with Max Richman of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, as we're going to be talking about these proposed Trump drug cards, which are apparently going to be sent out to seniors all throughout the country that will supposedly lower our prescription drug costs. Yeah, do you really believe that from the Trump administration? Well, let's find out, as Max has a whole lot more on this. It looks like the Trump administration is proposing these drug discount cards, or the nickname would be Trump cards, where you would basically get a $200 sort of credit card that would go towards paying for your prescription drugs. Is that kind of accurately describe what is being proposed by Trump?
I think maybe the only thing you left out is my hunch is if these cards ever do materialize, we'll see TRUMP emblazoned on them. You know, that's going to be part of it. There's no question about that. But President, you know, he's been talking about his health care plan for 4 years. There is no plan. Nothing has been put together to replace the Affordable Care Act that they so desperately wanted to repeal for many, many times. There were votes to repeal it, and now it's in front of the Supreme Court next month. This is another, you accurately described it as a gimmick. I'm not sure if it's even legal, but I know that some of the backstory that I've been aware of here in Washington is this administration tried to pressure the pharmaceutical companies to issue these cards. I think at that point it was $100 value that was on the card for prescription drugs, giving the Trump administration all of the credit, and the pharmaceutical companies at the last minute, I think, backed out because they saw it as such a blatant political scheme to attract senior votes. And you know, the senior vote, all the polling shows it has shifted dramatically away from the president in favor of Vice President Biden. So this administration knows it has to do something to appeal to seniors who are walking away from this administration in huge numbers, according to all the polls I've seen. So they've come up with this scam. The drug companies didn't want to be responsible for it. They knew it didn't make sense. So the administration is going to issue these cards on their own instead of the pharmaceutical companies coming up with the money. Apparently, it's all very amorphous right now, but apparently that money is, if it happens, and that's a big if, in the next 3 weeks, the cost of it will come out of the Medicare trust fund. It's going to deplete that trust fund even sooner. It's going to cost, I've been told, over $7 to $8 billion to do this. And again, its legality is questionable. And why is this happening? It's you know, someone talked about it. Remember in politics years ago, and maybe even now, people would talk about walking around money, where people would get a cash bucket full of cash and walk around and help and essentially buy votes. That's what this is. This is walking around money, only on a much grander, larger scale.
And I'm sorry to say, $200 really isn't going to go that far, especially a one-time payment of $200 to help cover prescription drugs when you look at the cost of that. And as you brought up, well, the funding of this is very, very questionable too. And the legality, there's so many aspects around why this is, I don't even know if I call it a gimmick anymore. I like your term. It's a scheme. That's exactly what it is.
You know, you make such a good point. This does nothing to deal with the cost of prescription drugs. If the president were serious, he would have worked. He's had almost 4 years to change the law. Right now, since Medicare added Part D, the prescription drug part of Medicare in 2003, included in that law was a specific prohibition. The federal government is not allowed to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies for the best price for prescription medicine for seniors. This makes no sense. It didn't make sense in 2003. It makes no sense today. You have an entity representing tens of millions of people, and they're prohibited from trying to get the best deal negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. That's what needs to happen. That would address the actual high out-of-pocket costs and bring the cost down, not just to the the government, but to beneficiaries. And yet the president, the administration has known that this is the way to address the high cost of prescription drugs. It could save hundreds of billions of dollars, but they don't want to buck the pharmaceutical industry, so they haven't gone that route. That is the best way to deal with the high cost of drugs. It would save enough money, I've been told, to bring down, not only bring down the cost, but there'd be such savings. Medicare could add things like Medicare is a great program, but it doesn't cover hearing, vision, or dental. Some of that could be brought into the Medicare program by the savings if we could actually bring down the cost of prescription drugs and not peddle another scheme, as this president seems to want to do.
Well, one of the arguments the administration is making as to why they want to roll out these drug discount cards is that they want it to serve as a test as to whether the cards would encourage Medicare beneficiaries to more regularly take their medicine while also lowering costs. What do you make of this argument that this could serve as a test to maybe encourage seniors to take medications? I'm not buying it. What do you think?
I don't buy it. It's a stretch, and it's a stretch because it has to fit in the parameters of the law. As I understand it, these kinds of demonstration programs are fairly limited. They cost nothing like $7 to $8 billion, and they require basically a kind of a peer review to determine if a demonstration, a pilot, would end up, it would cost some money, but it would save money in the long run. So, you know, the theory is that if they can make the argument that if seniors have this discount, they are more likely to take the drugs they need, it would lower the incident of illness because they would have the prescriptions that they need, and therefore it would save money in the long run. This is a huge stretch and is only being framed in this way to at least try to comply with the law as it addresses the use of demonstration or pilot programs in the Medicare program. Again, I think you called it a scheme. This is another aspect of a scheme.
Oh, and there's a certain logic problem, too, with what they're talking about, this being a test. And it just goes to simple science 101, which I know the administration, not the biggest fan of science, but if you're going to issue all of these Medicare discount cards to everyone who's on Medicare, how do you know if it actually does make them take their medicine more if you don't have a control group? I mean, that's kind of science 101.
Logic has never been an obstacle in what this administration has tried to do. This is just such a bad idea. And frankly, I don't know that this is going to even happen. I think it's a good talking point. It's something the president, I'm sure, will be talking about at his rallies. I don't know if he talked about it in Florida yesterday, but I would be surprised if he didn't roll it out. And he's going to be in Pennsylvania and in Iowa in the next few days. It's going to be a good talking point. I don't know that if it happens, but I'll tell you one thing. They can't do all of this. They can't give all, I think maybe 30 million people now are enrolled in the Medicare Part D prescription drug plans. They're not going to be able to do this on that scale in the next couple of weeks before the election. Would you be surprised if those people that had access to these cards, even if it even happens, would just happen to be seniors in places like Florida, Iowa, North Carolina, battleground states? Would you be surprised if that's the way it played out? I wouldn't.
Yeah, not whatsoever, exactly. Well, it's probably too late. A couple more minutes left for you here, Max. Let's say that he does go ahead and try to roll out this program. There's probably no way he's going to get people these cards ahead of the election, but he could sound out letters saying, well, these cards are on the way. Let's say he ends up losing in November, but he still sends out these letters in a few weeks. Could a potential Biden administration cancel this plan and at least save Medicare a little bit of money?
Well, I think if that's the outcome of the election, I think you'll see this this, and along with the payroll tax issue we talked about, I think you'll see that disappear. I don't think it'll be pursued by, I'm sure it won't be pursued by the next administration, and I think the Congress would object strongly to some of these expenditures, and they won't, you know, hopefully they won't be so intimidated by a Republican president, at least those on the Republican side.
Well, and really, too, if he does end up losing in November, he's probably going to abandon the program because, well, what's in it for him anymore if he's no longer in office? That's kind of,
you know, when I thought about this payroll tax issue the other day, and the fact that it would really bankrupt the program, that's not novel to this president. I think he's filed for bankruptcy 6 times in his business career. Each time he does this, I remember in 2016, the press conferences with all these electricians, plumbers, painters involved in the buildings in the casinos in Atlantic City. They were left holding the bag. They were stiff. They never got paid. That was a bankruptcy. And so in my view, the way this president is approaching Social Security and the elimination of the payroll tax, you know, so what if it's another bankruptcy? Who will be left holding the bag? Seniors and workers, disabled, survivors, children. Is that going to have an impact on the president, or will he just walk away the way he has done in his past declarations of bankruptcy?
Well, I think you're right in that case where he's just going to walk away and leave everyone else with the bill. Hey, we've been speaking with Max Richmond, National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, ncpssm.org is a great resource to follow along on some of these gimmicks and schemes being proposed to Social Security and Medicare. Again, ncpssm.org. Max, as always, appreciate the time today.
Well, I thank you so much for inviting me and giving me a chance to speak to your audience out there.
All right, and before I go, I want to remind you that we do have our presidential debate watching party coming up Thursday, October 22nd, Biden debating Trump for the final time, and we have a debate watching party at Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. We are going to be indoors this time at the Dunsmore Room at Crooner's, but they have taken extra precautions at the newly remodeled Dunsmore Room. They have a great ventilation system to make sure everyone stays safe. Masks will be required, and the tables will be socially distanced. So now, since we're indoors, those tickets are going to go very, very fast. So order them now, am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. And hopefully we'll see you next Thursday for our debate watching party. All right, stay tuned. Matt McNeil is coming up next.